For the broadcast, we want to thank the Reverend Dr. William Barber, co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wells, Laura Gottesdiener, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring an archive contractor for 40 hours a week for $20 an hour. This is a contract position that will last from July through December of 2018. The archive contractor will steward the KBOO archival assets in all forms. They will work with historical KBOO content in many audio formats, as well as the Resource Space Archival Database, documents of KBOO history, and KBOO staff and volunteers. Please send in a resume, cover letter, and answer the question, why is KBOO important, to del@kboo.org. That's del@kboo.org. More information about responsibilities and position requirements can be found at kboo.fm.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor IRANFORM, U.S. Withdrawal from Nuclear Agreement and Path to War, on Friday, June 29th at 6:30 at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. The IRANFORM will feature Jamal Abdi, Executive Director of the National Iran American Council, journalist Reese Ehrlich, and local speakers in a discussion about withdrawing from the Iran nuclear deal. The sponsoring groups are involved in prevention of war and in supporting diplomacy and friendship with the people of Iran. Again, that's the IRANFORM U.S. Withdrawal from the Nuclear Agreement and Path to War on Friday, June 29th at 6:30 at the First Unitarian Church, 1211 Southwest Main Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good evening, it's 5:02, and you're listening to KBOO Portland. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO members and support from McMenamin's Barley Mill Pup, celebrating its 35th birthday Saturday, June 16th. Filled with Grateful Dead vibes and artwork, the party will be going on all day. The Garcia Birthday Band will play from 3 to 6 p.m. All ages welcome at 1629 Southeast Hawthorne. More details at McMenamins.com. And now it's time for your KBOO Evening News.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Southwest Dark is becoming Harvey Milk.
And Portland Pride is in full swing.
And in international news, Ethiopia releases thousands of prisoners.
Good evening. This is KBOO Evening News for Friday, June 15th, 2018. I'm Linda Olson Osterlund.
And I'm Annette Newell. A 13-block of stretch of Southwest Stark Street in Portland will soon get a new name in honor of a civil rights legend. The Portland City Council has voted to rename the stretch of road from NATO Parkway to Burnside as Harvey Milk Street. The group that worked for the name change chose the area because of the neighborhood's historic connection to the LGBTQ community. Milk was one of the country's first openly gay elected officials. In San Francisco, he led many fights against anti-gay measures until his assassination in 1978. Portland City Commissioner Nick Fish tweeted the announcement along with a picture of a street sign bearing the name Southwest Harvey Milk Street and wishes for a happy Pride Week.
People in charge of the Pride Weekend estimate about 60,000 people will be in the Rose City for the festival. For many in the LGBTQ community, it's an opportunity to be open about and celebrate who they are. The Pride Festival begins at noon tomorrow at Tom Tom McCall Waterfront Park. There are two marches that day that start or end at the North Park blocks. Organizers say the festival's big parade starts at 11 a.m. Sunday. 167 groups have signed up to participate. A three-day block party starts tonight at Scandals on Southwest Stark in downtown Portland. Portland police say threats of violence against those who attend the festival on social media are not credible, but they still plan to increase officers on patrol throughout the Pride Festival. Admission costs $8, but organizers say they will not turn anyone away for their inability to pay. For the first time, the Portland Gay Men's Chorus is donating part of the proceeds of their June 17th concert Sunday night to Pride Northwest and to Portland Pride.
The waters of reform continue to percolate in Ethiopia as new Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed warms up to the job. In May, his government lifted a state of emergency in place since early February when protests in the Oromo and Amhara regions disrupted the country. The relentless unrest drove President Hailemariam Desalegn from power in April, and Ahmed replaced him with a promise of a raft of reforms. For one thing, Ahmed has released around 1,000 prisoners, including just over 300 today. According to the state media outlet Fana, quoting the Attorney General of Ethiopia, 279 of the prisoners released today were being held on terrorism charges. Many were merely members or leaders of opposition parties and civil groups or foreign nationals who ran afoul of Ethiopian authorities. Ahmed has also moved to repair relations with neighboring Eritrea, agreeing to fully implement a treaty the two countries signed back in 2000 following a disastrous three-year war. Ethiopia has long been known to civil rights groups as a repressive country, and it remains to be seen how permanent these changes will be and how far they will go.
A man Beaverton police accused of sexually abusing children at a daycare pled not guilty in court today. But police say they're concerned there could be more than two alleged victims and have contacted all of the families who've enrolled children at Partridge House Daycare. Earlier this week, police arrested 69-year-old John Gilbreth, who faces charges of unlawful sexual penetration, sodomy, and sexual abuse. They took him to the Washington County Jail. They say that the two reports of abuse both involved children younger than four. Beaverton police encourage people who have any information about this case of possible child sex abuse to contact them.
The Hemp Farming Act of 2018 is a step closer to passing in the U.S. Senate. After a push by Oregon's lawmakers, Senators Ron Wyden and Jeff Merkley announced their bill to legalize the farming of hemp, which is now illegal. But the senators call that ban nonsensical and say it's hurting farmers who could be making money on a crop that's already used to make products sold legally all across the country. The Hemp Farming Act defines hemp as an agricultural commodity and removes it from the list of controlled substances. It would give states the chance to become the main regulators of hemp production. It's part of the Senate Farm Bill, which the U.S. Senate is now considering. The Democrats, Wyden and Merkley, worked with Republicans, including Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and Senator Rand Paul, on the Hemp Farming Act. They say it now has the support of another 25 senators.
Pittsburgh Post-Gazette cartoonist Rob Rogers was fired this week. Rogers tweeted the news yesterday morning. He began working for the Post-Gazette as a staff editorial cartoonist back in 1993 and was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize. His cartoons have been featured in the newspaper about 5 days a week. In late May, though, sometime around Memorial Day, Rogers says they began disappearing. In little over a week, Rogers said six of the cartoons were killed, one specifically after it had been placed on a page already. The first cartoon removed that Rogers drew depicted President Trump placing a wreath on a tombstone that read, "Truth, Honor, Rule of Law." Rogers said 19 cartoons and proposals over the last 3 months were rejected by either the editorial page editor, Keith Burris, or the publisher, John Robison Block. Rogers said that he did not receive an official explanation for why the cartoons were killed, but was given a set of guidelines that included setting certain conditions on his work and an approval process for the cartoons. On Thursday, he was fired during an off-site meeting with two Post-Gazette human resources representatives. Burris said the Post-Gazette offered Rogers to continue working as an independent contractor, but Rogers declined. This is the most recent controversy involving the Post-Gazette's editorial pages. Last January, both the Post-Gazette and its sister paper, the Toledo Blade, published an editorial titled, quote, Reason as Racism, quote, that supported President Trump's stance on immigration, ignoring his vulgar descriptions of countries like Haiti or in Africa. Keith Burris, as the editorial page editor of the Blade, authored the piece. The Post-Gazette newsroom, along with some members of the Block family and outside critics, condemned the article.
Schilling Cider House in Portland is celebrating its one-year anniversary, and it's inviting folks to a special event taking place during Cider Week. It's called Cirque de Schilling. On June 23rd, Schilling Cider is promising acrobats, carnival games, and, of course, cider. KBOO's Zelos Merchant spoke with Schilling Cider House Portland's general manager, Jenny Dorsey, to find out more.
Okay, I have in the studio Jenny Dorsey, the general manager of Schilling Cider House Portland. Welcome, Jenny.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
Yes. So there's so much on the horizon here. It's a busy time anyway for everyone, but I hear there's some sort of special Cirque de Schilling
there
event
is.
Coming up.
So this is Schilling's one-year anniversary for our Portland location. We have made it a year. It's unbelievable. We're so happy for the support from everyone. So we've decided to throw you a party. And by party, I mean circus. So we've brought 12 of our closest cider friends. They're going to be pouring two beverages each. And then we have lots of circus acts for everyone to partake in.
Wait, circus acts? You didn't tell me that before the
yeah.
So go into that some more.
Yeah, so we're just finalizing all the details on exactly who's going to be there. But I can tell you that they're all going to have at least 25-minute performances. And they're going to be amazing.
Oh, my gosh. Well, circus is a huge field. So are we talking acrobats? Are we talking
aerialists?
Are we talking...
Not aerialists, just because we will be outside.
True. Okay.
But we are talking contortionists, acrobats, lots of single acts, double acts.
So great.
Mm-hmm.
So great. We can't even say that that's Portland anymore. Like, it doesn't even start in Portland, but now it's like this global, wonderful fascination.
Definitely.
With that beautiful art form. And how better to enjoy that than with some cider?
It's true. So you grab your glass of cold cider out in the sun, watching all of the acts, and then there's lots of things for you to partake in as well. So there'll be tarot readings. There'll be a dunk tank. You wanna dunk your favorite cider professional? I think this is the time to do it.
Favorite cider professional. Oh, so how did you talk your people into doing this? And who's actually, like, who's agreed to be the dunk tank person?
So we have about 10 different people, and you can either purchase the tokens and then throw them at the thing, or
okay.
You can get your $20 and you can just go up and push it. If there's someone that you really think needs to go in the dunk tank, you can always just run up and push the button.
I love that you just fast-tracked that, you know, because, I mean, everybody loves a good dunk tank, but... You know, sometimes you're like, oh, no, I'll only have so many tokens and I want to drink more cider. I want to ride that right over there. That you're like, well, you can just slap down a 20 spot and you could just bypass all of that.
Maybe you're not the best shot. That's okay.
That is so understanding and inclusive. Totally. All right. So not to get too fixed on the dunk tank thing. So they have 10 people. Are they in a rotation throughout a different person each day for?
This is only from 2 to 6 p.m.
Okay.
So each of them will have just about a 15-minute time period. We don't want anyone to get too cold. So
that's very kind.
We're going to let them get out of the dunk tank.
That's kind of you.
Very yeah.
Because you want to keep them happy so they'll keep working for you, right?
Exactly. And then we'll also have tarot readers, face painters, henna tattoos. All of this that you can partake in for free during the four-hour time period.
Oh, my goodness. Well, it's important to know this is an adult circus, right?
Yes.
There's no kiddies here.
No, adult only. So then you're free to partake of your beverages anywhere within the area, which is going to be the entire middle section of the goat blocks. So Schilling is so happy to be in the goat blocks, and they have allowed us to take over the entire middle section in order to throw this carnival. So we're looking at that 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. time period, and tickets are available now through Eventbrite or in-store at Schilling Cider House Portland.
Right. And how much are tickets?
$25, and that gets you 5 tokens, which is 5 4-ounce beverages, and then everything else is free to partake in.
Wow. Okay. And just so our audience knows, Cider Week is actually 10 days.
It is. So it's June 21st through July the 1st.
Okay. And Cirque du Soleil is on June 23rd.
Correct. From 2 to 6 p.m.
This is Zelo Zelos Marchant for KBOO News.
Listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin. At 6, it's Bread and Roses. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tonight's weather, cloudy with clearing out late, a low of 55. On Saturday, clouds are again there on Saturday morning, but they give way to sun in the afternoon. We can expect a high of 80 on Saturday. Then on Sunday, look out, because we're expecting 90. Today in history, representatives of the U.S. and Great Britain signed the Oregon Treaty in 1846. This settled the dispute over who controlled the Oregon Territory. The treaty established the 49th parallel from the Rocky Mountains to the Strait of Georgia as the boundary between the United States and British Canada. And on this Pride weekend, the quote of the day is from transgender and gay rights activist Marsha P. Johnson, who said, quote, "I carry my wonder drug with me everywhere I go. A can of mace. If they attack me, I'm going to attack them." End quote.
And now we hear from the current cast, a project of the Center for Transformative Action in Ithaca, New York.
Try not to get carried away on this current cast. When you think rip current, you might think the Atlantic Ocean, but rip currents are quite common in the Great Lakes as well. National Weather Service meteorologist John Hitchcock says there are a couple conditions necessary to create a rip current.
One, you need a fairly windy day that generates significant wave action. Then the second part you need is a sandy shoreline.
When the wind piles waves up on the beach, the pressure carves a trench in the sand that allows water to rush back into the lake. This happens so quickly that it carries everything out with it, including the unlucky swimmer. But don't panic. Hitchcock says you can escape from a rip current by swimming parallel to the beach. CurrentCast, produced with Cornell's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future, supported by New York's Environmental Protection Fund and Sea Grant, online at currentcast.org.
Time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Native American news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The South Dakota Supreme Court issued an opinion Thursday that state courts do not have jurisdiction over certification of the Keystone XL pipeline permit. Pipeline opponents appealed the Public Utility Commission's 2014 certification of TransCanada's 2010 permit. On appeal, a Sixth Circuit judge upheld the certification, and opponents appealed that decision. Now, the High Court says neither the Sixth Circuit nor the Supreme Court has standing under state law to hear the appeal. Victoria Wicks reports.
In South Dakota, if a utility company doesn't start a project within 4 years of getting a permit, it has to certify to the PUC that it can still meet the permit conditions. The South Dakota PUC held extensive public hearings in the summer of 2015 to certify the Keystone XL permit. After the PUC accepted TransCanada's assurances, opponents appealed to circuit court, where the PUC's decision was upheld. When the state Supreme Court agreed to hear opponents' challenge to the lower court's ruling, it asked parties to address whether state courts have jurisdiction over certification. During oral arguments in April, Robin Martinez represented Dakota Rural Action. He said the 2015 hearing was quasi-judicial in nature and warranted protections.
The fact that the Public Utilities Commission went through a nine-day evidentiary hearing gave us, you know, some due process rights. We frankly don't think they were sufficient.
Pipeline attorney William Taylor told justices that TransCanada believed that the hearing was legally unnecessary, but the company did not object because doing so might delay certification.
And at the time, because of the political climate, we had reason to believe that the presidential permit that is the prerequisite to the construction of this pipeline was going to be granted, and time was of the essence.
The Supreme Court agreed with TransCanada. The pipeline still faces opposition in federal court in Montana, where oral arguments were heard last month. And in Nebraska, the state Supreme Court will hear arguments this fall. For National Native News, I'm Victoria Wicks in Rapid City, South Dakota.
Wells High School in Maine will remove its Indian mascot logo but keep its warrior name. A committee voted this week to remove Native American imagery after a seven-month study. The Press Herald reports the committee came up with a number of recommendations for the school board, including the removal of Indian imagery across the district and retire the warrior head logo in the Wells High School Hall of Fame. The Wells School is among schools across the country considering dropping their Indian mascots. Just this week, a Cincinnati area school could not reach a vote on its Indian mascot, which will remain for now. A San Francisco board voted this week to grant a rehearing for the fate of a statue Native people and their supporters want removed near City Hall. The San Francisco Chronicle reports the Board of Appeals had ruled in April that the early days statue should remain in place, but granted the rehearing after hearing testimony from people calling for its removal. Some Native people say it glorifies colonization. The more than 100-year-old statue features a priest standing over an Indian lying on the ground. The removals of Confederate statues across the country reignited the push to remove statues of settlers and colonists. The rehearing in San Francisco may take place this summer. This week, the Blackfeet Nation and Interior Department leaders signed documents implementing the Blackfeet Water Rights Settlement and Water Compact. It resolves a decades-long battle by the Montana tribe to protect its water rights. Tribal and Interior Department officials, along with some members of Congress, were at the signing ceremony in Washington, D.C. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
A court in Denmark has ordered the government to compensate 18 Iraqis 14 years after Danish forces failed to prevent their torture. 23 victims in all had originally sued Denmark over the incidents which occurred in 2004 during Operation Green Desert near the port city of Basra. According to Al Jazeera, the victims were captured by Iraqi security forces and a Danish battalion and later said that they were subjected to, quote, torture and inhumane treatment, unquote. The Danish court said that while there is no evidence that the Danish soldiers participated in or could have predicted the extent of the torture, they were aware of, quote, real risk to the detainees and did nothing to stop what happened. Each of the 18 remaining plaintiffs were awarded 30,000 kroner, equivalent to $4,600. Denmark has gotten into trouble for hiding questionable behavior by its forces in Iraq over more than a decade. The country participated in a cover-up of the murder of Iraqi civilians by the mercenary group Blackwater in 2007, according to a document released by the paper Jyllands Posten in 2015. The small North European nation still has about 180 soldiers in Baghdad to train local forces. It participated in the 2003 invasion as part of the coalition that was led by the U.S. and the U.K.
A day-long general strike in Nicaragua brought much of the capital city of Managua to a quiet standstill. The BBC reports that state forces in riot gear patrolled empty streets with many businesses closed in solidarity with the two-month-long protests against the government of Daniel Ortega. In other cities, however, violent clashes continued with preliminary reports of three deaths. Around 160 people have died in the protests since April 19th, when Ortega announced cuts to Social Security and other benefit programs. Those cuts were withdrawn, but by then the protests had become a general expression of rage and frustration with the 11-year Ortega regime. Ortega was a leader of the Sandinista movement in the 1970s, which fought against the long-lived Somoza kleptocracy. Ortega led the multi-party Junta of National Reconstruction after the exile of Somoza in 1979 and was elected president in 1984. He served until 1990. His administration was characterized by a Marxist-Leninist domestic policy and a break with the United States. He was reelected in 2006, and his government has been the subject of numerous accusations of repression and state violence. Talks are scheduled for today between the government and opposition leaders.
The summit meeting between President Donald Trump and North Korean Supreme Leader Kim Jong-un dominated the media for much of this week. Analysts are still divided on whether there were any solid accomplishments from it, but KBOO's Ray Bodwell is not convinced that was the actual objective of this meeting.
Donald Trump returned from his meeting with Kim Jong-un, boasting of a breakthrough and tweeting that, quote, there is no longer a nuclear threat from North Korea, and then telling Americans that they can sleep well at night. Who knows? Maybe denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula will emerge over time, but I find it hard to believe that the North Korean dictator will give up his small but sufficient nuclear deterrent to a president with a proven history as a liar and a deal-breaker. And as for the agreement signed by Trump and Kim, it's a toothless document that lacks any specific commitments or timetables and was designed to allow them to sign something under the lights and in front of the cameras. This was all just part of the show. I personally think the propaganda value back home was the primary motivation for both of them. And in Trump's case, in addition to creating the appearance of leadership to his loyal base, he gains the added benefit of creating yet another media distraction while he and his accomplices in this authoritarian and kleptocratic administration continue to gut our country. Here are just a few of the regime's outrages over the last 10 days. Last Thursday, at the direction of Attorney General Jeff Sessions, the U.S. Department of Justice announced that it was siding with the state of Texas and has decided that it no longer intends to enforce the Affordable Care Act, claiming the parts of the act are unconstitutional. I'm not a constitutional scholar, but I could have sworn the job of the Justice Department was to enforce the laws on the books unless or until the Supreme Court rules them unconstitutional. On Friday, corruption allegations against EPA Director Scott Pruitt grew to the point that even Republicans loyal to the president have begun calling for Pruitt to go. Louisiana Republican John Kennedy said this.
If you can't use good judgment and put taxpayers first, it's time to find another line of work.
Then over the weekend, Oregon Senator Jeff Merkley was refused admission into an ICE detention center in Brownsville, Texas. He was later admitted to a child immigrant processing center in McAllen, Texas, where he was shocked by what he saw.
So these are families that are coming to the U.S., having gone through horrific circumstances abroad, expecting that they finally made it to the shores of the U.S., and now they'll get a fair chance to present their case for asylum. And instead, they go through a new trauma with their children ripped out of their arms, sent away to they have no idea where.
This followed a Sunday report that in May, a detained immigrant who was arrested for illegally attempting to enter the U.S. committed suicide in his Texas cell when he was separated from his wife and child by border and immigration agents. On Monday, the net neutrality rules that protected consumers expired. Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown described it this way.
The only people eliminating net neutrality helps are a few companies, big telecom companies that control the business and will make money. But it hurts homeowners, it hurts students, it hurts individuals, it hurts small businesses.
Also on Monday, Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced a change from Obama-era immigration guidelines and that going forward, flight from domestic violence or gang violence are no longer valid as justifications for asylum applications to enter the U.S. And yesterday we learned that during an interview on Air Force One while returning from Singapore, Trump downplayed Kim's well-documented history of violence towards his own people in this exchange with Brett Beyer of Fox News.
I mean, he's clearly executing people.
He's a tough guy. He's a very smart guy. He's a great negotiator. But I think we understand each other.
Really? He understands a ruthless dictator who has executed thousands and locked hundreds of thousands of others in labor camps, but he blasts Justin Trudeau as dishonest and weak after the Canadian Prime Minister dared to defend his country from what he saw as bullying on the part of our president? Americans are growing increasingly concerned with Trump's disdain for the rule of law, his disregard for our global allies, and his embrace of authoritarianism. Trump's bullying has gotten so bad that some in his own party are starting to call him on it. Here's Republican Senator Bob Corker of Tennessee on Tuesday.
We can't do that because we'd be upsetting the president. We might poke the bear, is the language I've been hearing in the hallways. We might poke the bear. The president might get upset with us.
When Trump arrived in Singapore for his meeting with the North Korean dictator, Fox & Friends weekend co-host Abby Huntsman may have made the most unintentionally insightful observation of the whole event with this Freudian slip as she breathlessly described Donald Trump's emergence from Air Force One.
In Singapore, as we await this historic summit, regardless of what happens in that meeting between the two dictators, what we are seeing right now, this is history.
I'm now convinced it's critical to vote against any Republican in the upcoming midterm elections. Trump's support in Congress has to be cut off to prevent that Freudian slip from becoming a reality. For KBOO, this is Ray Bodwell.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Sam Bowman, Ray Bodwell, and Annette Newell. Our engineer is Liam Delta. The producer and the KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Zelos Marchant. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Linda Olson Osterland.
And I'm Annette Newell. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 9, it's Veterans Voice Radio, Northwest Veterans for Peace dealing with the health issues and after effects of war. At 10, Valley Views talks to the program director of the Corvallis Bike Collective. At 10:15, Intersections Radio introduces Simaspace, where you'll find the art of making sound visible. That's